All right, happy Wednesday. Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds with you here on this Wednesday.
Hump day.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is?
Hump day.
You know, I've been thinking about something you said yesterday, Jamie, over the last couple of days.
You should think about all the things I said.
I know, it's true. That's facts.
I'm just trying my hardest.
But I was thinking about something you said when it came to what the United States did in Venezuela, went and got Nicolas Maduro, and all of the conversation that has erupted in the aftermath. While I do believe much of this was about drugs, and I believe they wanted Nicolas Maduro, who's a bad guy, I'm starting to come around to your way of thinking of this oil thing feels like that's the linchpin here.
Yeah, doesn't it?
It does.
Because they're not talking about the Venezuelan people. They're not talking about democracy and trying to get the rightful winner of the 2024 election in power. They're talking about oil.
Here's also the unfortunate truth. And I don't mean to upset anybody when I say this.
Okay.
If you become addicted to drugs, mm-hmm. that is a personal thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are people that battle addiction. It's very serious. It's very dangerous. It affects a lot of people.
Yes.
But those oftentimes are choices that you make. That's the reality.
No, it is.
And so while I think that there should be efforts to make sure that we stem the amount of drugs that are hurting people, hurting families, taking loved ones away from you.
Yeah.
I think that should be a front and center focus of any administration. There is a level of personal accountability for people.
So what are you saying?
So while I think the drug issue should be a main issue, I don't know how big of a, I've almost flipped on this. I think the oil here has become the issue.
I think the drug issue was used to get to the oil issue.
Mm-hmm. Because there are
it's
there
the
are
launching
countries
pad.
Right.
That send way more drugs to the United States. There are more
and more
dangerous drugs coming from other countries.
Totally.
There was a Honduran president who was convicted of drug trafficking for 500 tons of cocaine, but he's pardoned.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, it's all hard. It's hard to follow all of these arguments because there are so many.
But a part of me really, and again, this maybe goes back to the things that Donald Trump has been saying for the last 2 years, which has been, you know, you've got bad people that are coming into the country that were unchecked, walking across the border, some doing terrible things here in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. Committing heinous crimes. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the issue of the drugs that are being brought in. And it's not just Venezuela. To your point, it's a lot of other places that are bringing a lot of drugs in. It feels like this is you walking towards the end of the diving board to take a couple of hops and jump in the pool. The diving board is the drugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The pool is the oil.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting to the pool. And that's kind of what it feels like here. It feels like at the end of the day, this was about the oil. And then Donald Trump saying that Venezuela is going to hand over 50 million barrels of oil to the United States.
Yeah.
So you go into a country, you take the leader, quote unquote, the de facto leader that nobody thinks is the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, while we're here, I'm going to just go ahead and we'll take that oil tanker and we'll, if you, 50 million. Okay. Yeah. We'll take that too. Like that's kind of how it feels
because
like
because the
buildup,
I mean, after, you know, you were hitting these boats, these, you know, alleged drug boats, you were hitting these boats and then all of a sudden you get this big buildup and you're blocking tankers, oil tankers. And so, and then that started happening. And now we're talking about oil,
which quite frankly, I don't mind so much the boats getting blown up. If you're bringing drugs into the United States, stop it before it gets to shore. I'm debatable.
But
we can talk about
it. But it was a means to an end, though.
Correct. This feels like I've started to come around towards Jamie here.
Yeah, and in his tweet, his Truth Social tweet, he says that it's 2 months worth of daily production to the United States, and he would control the profits from the sale of the oil to benefit, quote, the people of Venezuela and the United States. Details there are unclear. This is worth about $1.8 to $3 billion at current market prices.
It's not a lot of oil.
No.
Right. So, I mean, right off the rip.
Yeah.
It's a lot of oil, but it's not. You're not changing things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another big story in town here is John Morton out as OC of the Lions.
I kind of wonder.
He gone!
What are we going to do? I mean, is you know, Dan Campbell going to continue calling plays?
Yeah, writing on the wall.
I didn't think so.
So for the second time in less than a year now, the Lions have to go out and find an offensive coordinator. And it didn't go well this time because he only lasted a year, and then Dan Campbell had to take over. And so we'll see what happens here. A lot of big decisions in this offseason for these Lions.
Well, and there was some internal, it sounded like, according to some reporting, you know, maybe some internal issues with the offensive staff and not the offensive staff, but the players and the way that those games were being called. So that might have had something to do with it, too. But the production just wasn't as robust. Although they didn't have quite the offensive line that they have had the last couple of years either.
Well, those are more decisions they have to make. But under Morton, the Lions were 5-3 and averaged 29.9 points and 125.1 rushing yards when he was calling. They were 4-5, scoring 26.9 points per game and 115 plus yards on the ground under Campbell.
Hmm. Were you surprised about Harbaugh?
I am so surprised that John Harbaugh was fired in Baltimore. Just being from Pittsburgh and like he and Tomlin going toe-to-toe so many times.
Uh-huh.
But my dad told me last night that the talk in sports talk in Pittsburgh was whoever lost that game was going to get fired.
Okay.
And really? It happened. Yeah.
Wow.
I was surprised by that move as well. I mean, I don't think he'll be a free agent very long.
Absolutely not. Detroit Mayor Mary Sheffield, she's expected to join law enforcement and community leaders later on this morning. She's going to announce another historic drop in violent crime across the city. And according to city's officials, all major crime categories declined in 2025, including both violent and nonviolent offenses. Sources are saying that homicides fell to well below 200 last year, marking the lowest total in nearly six decades. Police Chief Todd Bettison and representatives from the federal and state and local agencies are expected to highlight the coordinated enforcement prevention strategies behind the reductions. Mayor Sheffield also expected to outline plans, for a new Office of Gun Violence Prevention, which was a key initiative she pledged to launch during her first 100 days while she was running for mayor. So good news again for the city of Detroit. Crime is going down everywhere, but we're really seeing a big drop statistically here in the city of Detroit.
Well, it's great. I mean, I think as former Mayor Mike Duggan was leaving office, that's kind of where it was set up to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was conversations about the National Guard coming to Detroit. It was never needed.
No.
Not that any violent crime is good.
Right.
You'd like it to be zero.
Zero, yeah.
That's not the utopia that we live in usually.
But no. I think those community violence initiative programs too, the CVI folks, the folks that are in the neighborhood are really helping to drive down the crime in the city.
Mm. There's new CDC guidelines on childhood vaccines. What does it mean for your children, for your grandchildren? We'll discuss next here on JR Morning.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said yesterday it's revising childhood immunization schedules to recommend four fewer vaccines. So what does that mean for parents and new babies coming into the world? Dr. Joseph Ficori is president of the Michigan chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and he joins us now. Good morning, doctor.
Yeah, good morning.
So I think it might be tough for the layman person to read into this and say, okay, what do I do now for my child? What is it that happened yesterday, and what should we do?
Yeah, thank you for having us and for having me have this conversation. So just to summarize, like you said, so on Monday, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, made adjustments to their recommendation to decrease their routine recommendation for immunization for respiratory virus, RSV, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, rotavirus, which causes pretty significant stomach bug type symptoms, and meningitis. And truthfully, these changes are very dangerous and unnecessary to make in our current climate. And so I understand the concern that many people have related to them specifically, is it just causes confusion, as you alluded to.
Dr. Ficori, I'm wondering, how do you anticipate these changes are going to alter the conversations that pediatricians have with parents, especially those who are already hesitant or confused about vaccines?
Yeah, that's an extremely important question. I think our biggest concern is that this could continue to just sow ongoing chaos and confusion, and that's not at the fault of the parent or guardian of a child. You know, I think just as the conversation surrounding what typical conversations people have with their pediatrician is just flooded with so many different pieces of information. And it is not wrong to ask questions. It's not wrong to want to learn more and understand. I think that where the concern arises is that these changes came truthfully seemingly out of nowhere. There was no backing to any science to make these changes. And they were modeled specifically after a European country, Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we don't follow that country's recommendations is because they're not in Denmark. We have a completely different risk of diseases here in this country. And the recommendations were made specifically to take care of children in America.
So you're going to have those conversations between the patients and the doctors happening to figure out what's best for their children in those specific instances. Is it more likely that doctors will continue to follow the CDC recommendations of 2025 and previous, or do they take what the CDC is recommending now into consideration?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a pediatrician, I can tell you that the conversation is quickly shifting in the world of pediatrics, and we will continue to follow whichever governing body provides guidance specifically grounded in evidence and science. Currently, that is unfortunately no longer the CDC. And so I do understand and recognize that, again, that causes a lot of confusion and fear amongst many people. Most pediatricians, if not all, will begin to follow the American Academy of Pediatrics, and their recommendations have been congruent with the CDC for many, many years, and they put out their recommendations as well over many years. And that's who we will follow. That's who we are recommending to follow as a Michigan chapter, because their recommendations are grounded by the evidence that supports the children and adolescents of America specifically.
And states can decide their own recommendations, right? And so we'll see what Michigan does here. But my question to you is, what happens if a child doesn't get the hepatitis A or B or meningococcal disease shots? Like, what happened to these children?
Yeah, so to the first part of your comment, states can make recommendations. And so the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, even prior to this announcement from the CDC, had put out some commentary and some recommendations related to standing orders that physicians and other practitioners can follow. And they adhere to the recommendations that I alluded to from the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Family Physician Organization as well, because this does not necessarily only affect children. It can affect vaccines for adults in the future. To your second part of the question, so if somebody does not receive these particular vaccines, depending on which vaccine we're talking about, they are at higher risk. So for example, hepatitis, as you alluded to, the hepatitis B dose specifically is one of the most effective tools that we've had to prevent infection. And we've seen 99% of people drop without having infection, from 16,000, what it used to be, to now less than 20. And so losing a vaccine like that is pretty concerning. Something like rotavirus, that's a vaccine that helped prevent an estimated 50,000 hospitalizations among children and infants in the United States every year due to severe dehydration from very severe diarrhea. And so these are sorts of things that begin to be concerning for us as we potentially lose children who have immunity to these conditions, but also as we begin to have less community immunity as well.
Dr. Fakuri, you know, we're already seeing declines in measles vaccination rates. And from a public health perspective, how concerned are you that this new schedule could lead to outbreaks of preventable diseases?
Yes, I truthfully am very concerned And I think that I can speak on behalf of pediatricians in the state that are also equally as concerned. I practice pediatrics in the hospital, and so I see patients and children who are admitted in a hospital when they reach a certain point to need to be in a hospital. And unfortunately, just last year alone in 2025, and this is very anecdotal just to my personal experience in the hospital, I have seen the most cases of whooping cough or pertussis that I have in my entire career of now 12 years. And so, you know, something like that, that is preventable, that I'm seeing more of, that we're beginning to see more of. And then as you alluded to with measles, particularly in Oakland County, we've recently had that discussion. I think that that concern is significantly high, that we may begin to see these things that we used to not see, and they pose a severe risk to our children.
All right. This is a very important discussion. Dr. Joseph Ficori, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, I appreciate the time. And I just want to encourage families to be able to have those conversations with their pediatrician and to continue to build on that trusting relationship that already exists.
Great advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a nice morning.
And basically, that's the bottom line. You got to talk to your doctor.
Yeah, got to talk to your doctor. Mm-hmm. Love to know what you think. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJERRY. You can call or text us on that line. You know, I look at something like, you know, hepatitis B has obviously been a focal point here. Mm-hmm. If the mother does not have hepatitis B, that means the baby when born will not have hepatitis B. And I don't know many children who are like hard drug users when they're fresh out of the womb.
Born.
I don't know how they're contracting hepatitis B in the very early stages of their life. So the questions that I think people ask about something specifically like hepatitis B, I think is legitimate.
That would be a question for Dr. Ficori.
Yes.
But I think that these people that have dedicated their lives to pediatrics and have done the studies and the science to give these vaccinations should take precedent over folks who just have a hunch. That's my thought. But you have many thoughts, I'm sure, out there. Give us a call. We'll talk about it further at 6:35.
It's an interesting topic because when you think about, look, you go back 100 years and the medical advancements that have been made is unbelievable. I mean, it is keeping people alive for longer. Mm-hmm. It is keeping people healthier for more extended period of time. You know, the life expectancy now of a human is way longer than it was in 1920.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
1925.
Yeah.
Right. And so there has to be trust at a certain base level in our healthcare system, in the world of medical advanced miracles that are performed every day. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it should be out of the question or off the table for people to continue to wonder or ask questions or be inquisitive. That's A, human nature, but B, when you're dealing with a kid, right? Kids, grandkids, you are hyper-protective. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that you are doing everything in your power to do right by them, to make sure that they are set up for a healthy life.
Of course.
And so I never cast aspersions on people that are asking these questions, that want answers, that want to know what causes X, Y, and Z, right? I think all of that's good. I also think that the skepticism amongst the drug companies plays a huge role in this. I think the skepticism amongst insurance providers causes a lot of skepticism. Mm-hmm. And so you have this storm of you're asking people who are busy working, paying bills, making dinner, taking their kids to daycare or school. And they also now have to be diligent in trying to figure out what's best for their kids. It's tough. It's very hard.
I agree with you. Being a parent and wanting the best for your child is everything.
Absolutely. Number
and one. I understand that portion of it. I think we got to this point because of COVID and the skepticism over that mandate for that shot.
That's it.
And down the road, here we are. We're changing childhood vaccines that have been evidence-based and proven for years.
But I also think, too, that some of the vaccines that have been out that have cured, like polio or those types of things, I think after a certain time, I mean, it's been out for a long time, it's cured polio, but I think you maybe should go back and take a look at it, because now it, you know, it cured polio, but it could be causing something else. And so we need to take a look at it just to make sure, you know, that it's not doing something, because we know more now. We have, I think, better testing now, and we can find out. Maybe everything is fine with that vaccine and we don't have an issue, but then maybe it could be causing something now in children that we didn't know about.
So, yeah.
I don't mind checking those out again.
I mean, here's the other part, too, is, like, the hepatitis B vaccine wasn't always administered to newborns. That wasn't always the case. In the 90s, that came after.
Yeah.
It wasn't that first initial round of shots. It came after the fact. Mm-hmm. Because, again, kids weren't, I mean, unless the mother had hepatitis B.
Right.
They didn't have it.
Exactly. So they a newborn, I mean, you're not going to.
They weren't. Yeah. They weren't. That wasn't part of the vaccine schedule.
Right.
Now it is. It changed. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Things change.
Sure.
All the time.
Sure.
But again, when you start talking about how people view medical intervention for their kids who are newborn babies and new parents, and it's a tough world to navigate. And so when you start looking at all of that, I mean, I understand why people have questions. Some of it is legitimate. Some of it is unfounded.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Some of it is the world of conspiracy. Some of it is.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the world of social media, mm-hmm. and these algorithms and the dark hallways that you go down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tough situation, because I get where people want more. They want more answers. I mean, you know, the FDA had approved Chantix for those who wanted to quit smoking.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they had approved Chantix for years. It was widely available. Well, then the FDA a few years ago pulled Chantix off the shelves. I'm actually not even sure if it's back.
Okay.
But they pulled it off the shelves because it was giving, I mean, the risks of cancer were going up by taking Chantix. So the FDA looked at a bigger body of evidence,
uh-huh.
and said, oh, wait, this might not be super helpful for people.
They just rechecked it and saw that that was happening.
I think this world... And you come from a family,
mm-hmm.
of providers and doctors and nurses. This is, we should never stop investigating. We should never stop looking. We should never stop testing. All of those things should be ongoing.
Well, that's what science is.
Yes.
Is having a question to something and doing a bunch of research,
yep.
to figure out an answer. And to your point, sure, we feel like we have an answer to some of these things, and going back and doing evidence-based research is not a bad thing. These recommendations do not come from evidence-based research. They looked at Denmark. Denmark has 6 million people.
Exactly.
We have 300 million people. We have different problems here.
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. You can call or text. Brian, what do we got from those on the text line?
Art's got an interesting point here. He says, this is real short, he goes, one of his concerns is that health insurance companies will now leverage the CDC ruling to avoid paying for, quote, non-recommended vaccines.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which is a concern for people.
Of course. As it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's money coming out of your pocket.
And yep. we have the healthcare system and insurance system here is broken. It needs to be fixed. By the way, they need to figure that out soon.
Well, that's something else they need to deal with in D.C. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm sure they're diligently working on that as we speak.
Back to the hepatitis B thing, according to doctors, newborns need hepatitis B vaccine soon after birth because they could be unknowingly exposed to the virus. If it's not during labor because of the mom, shortly after coming home, because caregivers can give that to newborns because they don't know they're infected. They don't have symptoms. Mm. And it's really bad for kids if you get that. If you're infected at birth, you develop chronic hepatitis. That's why they recommend this vaccine the way they do.
You know, but you mentioned the COVID vaccine. I think that's a huge.
I agree with her.
That's the turning point.
Yes, yes.
Because that was, look, you go back to COVID, things were so upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
True.
And so they needed something to stem the tide of these serious illnesses, people getting sick. They fast tracked this thing.
They did.
Okay. I can tell you, I know people who have had real complications with that thing. Real complications. Mm-hmm. I know people. I mean, I got the vaccine. I was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I never had any mm-hmm. sort of side effect from it,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? People are different. Some people, you can eat a strawberry and feel totally good. Some people eat a strawberry and feel crummy.
Right.
Right.
Which is exactly the same thing as having COVID itself. It killed some people and didn't
some people,
kill others.
Everybody. Correct. Right.
So the skepticism of the not only the technology in the vaccine, but then how quickly it came about, how quickly it was rolled out, the messaging behind it. And again, when we are operating on CDC recommendations on the vaccine the schedule, years of research done, not so much on that. And so the skepticism,
that's where it started,
ramped up.
Yep.
But there was years of research on mRNA vaccine.
That's
and
true.
They tweaked it to take care of that. That's the beauty of it. And that's why a lot of people's lives were saved.
Speaking of medical issues, you're going to go on ChatGPT and go, my arm hurts. What's wrong with me?
No.
Well, some people are. We'll talk about it next on J.R. Morning. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't turn your mic on when I'm singing Biggie. That's that's for us only.
It's a no for me, dog.
You call me Big Pop.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's right. That's Big Pop.
That is a no for me, dog.
It's a no for me, dog. Oh, okay. My. All right, we're talking vaccine schedule and some of the changes made by the CDC, particularly on things like hepatitis B, hepatitis A, RSV, rotavirus. All these were previously recommended for children, for infants, and now if you're high risk, consult your doctor. That's the recommendation of the CDC. Dan's in Troy. He's got thoughts. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Thank you for a great show. I've been a big listener since J.P. McCarthy.
God bless you, Dan.
Just want to tell you, I mean, put the politics aside. Who do you call when your son is sick? Do you call a politician or do you call your pediatrician?
I do not call my congressperson.
No.
Thank you. And same as here. I mean, my kids are growing, my grandkid. But the point is this. We all listen to WJR all this time because I know you guys come up reasonable, and I know not 100% right all the time, but most of the time.
Hey!
So that's where you listen. That's where you trust. And you have a trust in your politician. You cannot listen to a survey that is done or a research done by somebody doesn't know much about it. My point is, if you don't trust your pediatrician, then don't go to him. Those guys, most of them are working in a hospital. Most of them have no benefit by giving the shots. And I have not met, and I am in a big circle with family and friends of medical doctors and nurses and so on and pharmacists.
Oh, there you go.
So let's put the politics aside.
Yeah.
And worry about our kids.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing about it, whether they are right or wrong. It's been forever we've been taking shots, and we can see that we are not – it's working. It's working. That's all I can say. But I think what's happening so sad is everything is politics now, and that's so sad.
Yeah.
Agreed,
Dan. It's a great point. Thank you for the call.
I mean, and, you know, do you trust your politician, your you know, pediatrician, or ChatGPT?
Do you trust ChatGPT?
Do the politicians take the Hippocratic Oath that says do no harm? They do not. Doctors do.
Exactly.
Are we going to force ChatGPT to take the Hippocratic Oath?
Well, maybe they, hey.
Maybe they should. Because what people are doing is they are going to ChatGPT for healthcare advice. 40 million Americans, or excuse me, 40 million people globally are turning to AI for health information. So, for example, if you have some sort of ailment, some sort of issue, they're prompting AI to come up with a list of possible resolutions, issues based on the symptoms that you are describing. And there's concern amongst the medical community that people aren't getting in front of a doctor. But this is a new age for this technology. Brent Yaks, the CEO of Aucom, joins us to talk about it. Brent, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. What do you make of this? We've kind of opined on what the future of AI looks like, and I think it's going to be probably different than most of us even believe. But now it's being used as a medical tool, not by medical professionals, but by people who want to figure out what's wrong.
Yeah, you know, we've been seeing this trend for a little bit, actually. So I'm glad Axios put together a story covering it. But there's some good uses of it. You know, I love the fact that people are using it to ask questions and do research and find out what this doctor speak actually means. But it gets to a dangerous territory when you're looking at, you know, advice and health advice and mental illness issues. So we are a little concerned. We're keeping an eye on it.
And, Brent, you know, my thing is, you know, some ailments have certain symptoms, but a lot of times these symptoms are similar to other ailments. So you may get symptoms and AI may tell you, oh, you have this, but you could be going down the wrong path. You could have something totally different.
Well, you're right. And what we've seen out there now is that AI is wrong about 48-49% of the time. So every single time you ask, there's a 50% chance it's going to be wrong with what it's telling you when it comes to health diagnosis.
I saw an expert talking about this, and they said if you use AI or ChatGPT as an educational tool, like, I don't understand this about my healthcare bill, or I have these symptoms, should I call a doctor? That's fine. But if you're asking it to diagnose you, then you have a problem.
I think that's a great way to look at it. It's if you want to understand this better, to know what this means, to take a look at this bill. Now, keep in mind, if you are putting information out there, redact your name, your information, anything that's personal about you. Don't just send anything out there. But you're right. If you want to ask questions, I think it's a great tool.
It's funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he has done this. He's a runner, and he's had some issues that he's never had before because he started running. And he's wondering what some of these things mean. And so he put it into ChatGPT, and he said, and then I looked at what it was on, like, WebMD, for example. Mm-hmm. WebMD is like cancer. You probably have cancer. It's probably a tumor. It's yeah. It's like the worst case scenario. He's like, but when I went to ChatGPT, it was like, well, here's the statistical breakdown of what it might be. And the cancer was very low on the list.
Okay.
It kind of gave you the most realistic
possibility
situation, yeah, as opposed to the worst case. So there was like almost relief there for him.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm glad you brought up the WebMD, because I remember when that came out and everybody was jumping online to do self-diagnosis, and everything was like dramatic and horrible, and all the responses were basically like that. So it has come a long way from that. But again, it's not at the level of an expert. It's not at the level, like the caller before, a pediatrician knows more than a politician, right? ChatGPT does not have all the right answers, but your medical professional could.
I don't know. Mental health is where a lot of risks seem the highest, and you got these lawsuits, and you got new state bans emerging. Should there be a bright red line around where what AI should never do in healthcare?
You know, the funny you joke about the Hippocratic Oath with it. I think mental health is something, and something that's urgent. So say, for example, you're asking about, do I go to the ER? I think anything that's urgent or has to do with mental health should always go to a human. And that's maybe just a personal, even though I'm in technology, but mm-hmm. when it has to do with something that's really important and life-changing, get a person involved. That's the way I view it.
I think with all these, we're at the end of the interview here, with all these chat bots telling people, you know, to commit suicide and stuff, there has to be some regulation here.
Yeah.
We're
yeah,
not
absolutely.
There yet, though, yeah. And that's a different conversation.
Yep, you are right. And there's a lot they're trying out there. It's just not through yet.
Not there yet. Brent Yaks at Allcom, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Happy New Year to you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
The regulation part of it is huge. Because what you don't want to do is go on to ChatGPT, give them your symptoms,
mm-hmm.
and then they're like, that's no big deal. Meanwhile, there's
something could brewing that's big.
And then you're like, I'm not going to worry about it. And then later
on. It has to be a tool, not the be-all, end-all.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, 7 o'clock hour coming up. We're going to talk to Mike Bouchard. Not that Mike Bouchard, but the other Mike Bouchard.
Exactly.
About his congressional run, what he thinks as a military member, what the United States did in Venezuela and bringing Nicolas Maduro to the United States, and a whole lot more coming up on JR Morning. Don't go anywhere. All right, 7 o'clock hour. It's good to have you. Lots to do still. And, you know, Donald Trump talked about that there's going to be, what, something like 50 million barrels of oil handed over to the United States from the reserves in Venezuela after the military action taken there and bringing Nicolas Maduro and his wife to the United States. It'll be sold at market prices, he said. And, you know, it's about 2 months-ish worth of oil.
Okay.
For the United States. So it's something. It's not substantial. But I'm beginning to very much believe that this was the hook was got to keep the drugs out of the United States. The regime that Nicolas Maduro was running was absolutely rotten. Mm-hmm. And you get the guy that you wanted, then you go ahead and, you know, keep the drugs out of the United States. But then also, just so happens that Venezuela is rich in oil. And
well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, if you had another country that, you know, is bringing drugs into the United States, but they had no oil, you know, would we necessarily be going after them to keep the drugs out?
Well, there are a lot of bad people in the world. Yeah. There are a lot of authoritarian, dictator-like people.
There are other people.
Jong-un. There are a ton, but we're not going after them.
There are other people in the Maduro regime that are wanted by the United States
warrants.
That have faced charges.
Yes.
That same regime is still in place.
Right.
So if it was about democracy, then you'd figure out a way to get the election winners in 2024 into power, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I actually agree with what Mike Johnson said the other day, which was this isn't a regime change. This is a change in the way the regime does business. Mm-hmm. So because of that, that was one of the reasons why they aren't taking this step of, you know, backing Machado, for example,
right.
or others that are more popular in mm-hmm. Venezuela, because they don't want the regime change. They wanted Maduro. And I think now it's the oil that they were after.
Well, and I do think there's a portion of this that's the Chinese influence, the Russian influence in Venezuela.
Absolutely.
They did not like that.
Right.
But, like, what is the reason for doing this? This is what the question Congress has and the American people, too. This would be a great time to sit in front of the cameras and tell the American people what you did here.
Which, by the way, I also think is worthy. Because you cannot have adversarial countries creeping over into your neck of the woods.
I agree.
You can't do that.
100%.
So if Russia and China are becoming a little more boisterous mm-hmm. in the region, mm-hmm. that is problematic. Certainly.
The Oakland County Prosecutor's Office is asking a judge to allow additional review and potentially uphold life sentence without parole sentences for 16 people convicted of crimes committed before they turned 21. Now, Prosecutor Karen McDonald filed motion seeking more information, citing challenges created by recent Michigan Supreme Court rulings that changed how these sentences must be evaluated. The court has ruled that mandatory life without parole sentences are unconstitutional for defendants who were 20 years old or younger at the time of their crimes. Oakland County prosecutors reviewed 95 cases and determined that 79 will require resentencing, while a smaller number may still warrant life sentences. One case cited involves Aaron Stinchcomb, convicted in the 1995 rape and murder of two 12-year-old girls. McDonald says the process risks re-traumatizing victims while placing an unusually high burden on prosecutors to keep the most violent offenders behind bars. So, you know, the Supreme Court came out with that decision saying, you know, you can't give them life sentences if they were 20 or under when the crime happened. And so Oakland County has about 95 cases. I mean, out of 95, 79 are going to require resentencing. Some they're going to try to keep in jail because there was such a heinous crime, and they're going to try to keep that life sentence going. So we'll see. We'll follow that with the Oakland County prosecutor.
A lot of work for lawyers coming up.
Oh, a lot of work. Yes.
There's work to be done within the Lions offensive coordinator role. I mean, Campbell's been here for 5 seasons. There have been 3 offensive coordinators so far.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got to go out and look for someone. They decided with John Morton to stay with continuity for Jared Goff. Maybe they go outside of the organization here.
That's
and bring a new face, a new, you know, discussion about things.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they need to, because John Morton's out. It was announced yesterday.
So here's my problem, if I can be a little pessimistic here.
Okay.
You had Ben Johnson was in-house, right?
Uh-huh.
And things did not work out with the first offensive coordinator
Anthony
that they brought
Lynn.
In, Anthony Lynn. So Anthony Lynn doesn't work out. I think, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Dan Campbell also take over play calling in his first season as well?
Good question. I don't know that answer.
I feel like he did, regardless.
Okay. I think things weren't going well.
Anthony Lynn didn't work out.
Okay.
Ben Johnson is in-house. He's already on staff. There was some bright lights there that they liked from him. Okay, well, he gets elevated. We saw what happened under Ben Johnson.
Of course, yes.
And now he's a head coach of the Chicago Bears. Then you bring in John Morton again.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work out. All I'm saying is we got to get this right. We got to get this right.
I mean, duh, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. But I'm a little more skeptical that they can get it right.
Hey, Chris has something to say. We got to get this right.
Hot take of Wednesday morning. I'm a little worried. That's all I'm saying.
No, but I agree with Jamie. I think it's time to go outside and get somebody.
But
I mean,
you gotta,
when you talk to fans, they say, listen, we got to, even fans are saying, we got to go
outside. Can't mess it up.
No.
They didn't interview that many people last year, just three people, and then John Morton ended up getting the job. If you read Dave Burkett's article in the Free Press, he says some names here that the Lions could maybe go for: New York Giants head coach Brian Daboll, former New York Giants head coach, because he and Campbell are friends. Denver Broncos pass game coordinator Davis Webb could be another candidate.
I saw on Twitter last night, I think it was Rappaport, Ian Rappaport, said that watch out for David Blau.
What?
Yeah. As a potential.
Really?
Former backup quarterback.
Yeah.
David Blau?
Yeah.
Yeah, David Blau is some. He was the, I think, quarterback's coach for the Commanders this year. And so he said watch out for David Blau.
Brian Flores would be awesome, but he probably is going to get a head coaching job.
Yeah, probably. Maybe we bring in John Harbaugh.
That's what I'm
going to
say.
Guard.
Maybe we just bring John
Harbaugh. Harbaugh's available.
He's a defensive guy.
which
is shocking, quite frankly.
John Harbaugh is the Ravens. Like, exactly. This is weird.
It is weird. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Looking back at the 2025 holiday shopping season, all in all, it was a good one. Certainly with all the economic challenges facing families these days, results were generally better than expected. The big story? Well, it's how AI impacted that shopping season, of course. Many credit AI actually with propping up the shopping season by creating efficiency, product discovery, and other key aspects of the shopping experience to streamline that experience in order to drive more sales. According to a LiveOps survey conducted by Pollfish, released in December, most shoppers indicated that they used AI in one form or another to facilitate their shopping, including access to delivery notifications, to execute item returns, or to get shopping recommendations and guidance from AI-powered bots through online chats, website support, and virtual assistants. The study shows that the vast majority of holiday shoppers, 85%, say they saw clear speed improvements from AI in customer service, according to the survey. Nearly one-third said benefits from AI include 24/7 support availability, and 20% said AI support was faster than waiting for a human. Now, while most of the feedback was positive, consumers also made clear, though, that they do not desire AI to replace human interactions, such as support services. 54% of respondents say humans provided better customer service compared to just 11% who say AI provided better support. And one cautionary note, if you're using AI to interact with your customers before, during, or after the sale, one clear recommendation from LiveOps is to be transparent about its use. Always notify the consumer when they are interacting with AI versus a human interaction. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. The 10th Congressional District in Michigan shaping up to be one of the most watched races in the 2026 midterms as voters consider fresh leadership for southeastern Michigan communities from Sterling Heights to Warren. The seat is open with incumbent Representative John James running for governor. And one of the candidates stepping forward is a veteran, and he has deep local roots and national service experience. He is Mike Bouchard. He is the son of Sheriff Michael Bouchard, and Mike is an Army National Guard veteran, son of Mike Bouchard, as I said, and he joins us now on JR Morning. Mike, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hey, it's Chris. Talk to you guys again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. You're a familiar name in Michigan, but this is your race now. What was the moment that made you say, I need to run, I'm ready to run for Congress?
You know, it was multiple small moments all throughout my military career, both good leadership and bad leadership. Made me know that I wanted to go into politics to make a difference, that I had the leadership and the experience to, but also that now is the right time.
I'm reading this Oakland Press article, and it's saying that you saw the killing of Charlie Kirk and that awakened something in you that something's wrong here in our country.
Yeah, so I was in a shipping container. It's where we were sleeping in Iraq, and I was watching it live on my phone and just seeing the political violence across this country. I think we need to step up, and we need new leaders at every level who say that violence is not okay and that we need to come together. I remember I was briefing the next day, and I was actually briefing about Iraq, and I was briefing that we could anticipate to see some political violence during their upcoming election. And a British colonel cut me off, and he was like, hey, I'm not trying to make a joke, but are you talking about your country or in Iraq? And so that kind of highlighted to me that now is the time for political violence to stop and for people to start stepping up against it.
I'm curious to know what your perspective is on the United States' actions in Venezuela over the last couple of days. What's been your takeaway?
Yeah, well, first, our military truly showed why they are the best in the world. I mean, the level of complexity that operation requires, I can't overstate. And I also think that President Trump has shown that he is a leader of action. The government of Venezuela, under orders from Maduro, has sent more drugs into the U.S. in the last decade than any other time in history. So I know a lot of people are saying this is really good for the people of Venezuela. That's great. But what I'm most excited about is that this is good for the people of the United States. This is good for our country, for reducing crime, reducing drugs, and making our country safer.
Is it really all? Was it in your mind all about drugs, or does oil play a part in this as well?
Well, my focus is on keeping this country safe. And so I think the reason that this is good right off the bat is because it's about drugs and keeping dangerous people out of the country. Is oil a benefit to our economy? Sure. Will that help bring down prices? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, this is about keeping our country safe, not for financial gain.
You were in Iraq, and Iraq took a long time, and it's still an issue. And I remember when Saddam Hussein was taken, everyone was like, okay, great, the mission's done, and it certainly wasn't. Could you see a point where maybe Venezuela turns into an Iraq and boots on the ground have to happen?
I see why people want to draw a lot of comparisons. And as somebody who's been on the ground in Iraq and seeing what we're doing in Venezuela, the way we're going about it is totally different. I mean, this was a law enforcement arrest. Maduro was indicted in courts and was arrested by law enforcement in conjunction with the military. And it's not a large-scale operation. I mean, when we arrested Manuel Noriega in the 90s, we sent 25,000 U.S. military to go arrest him. This was a small force of 200 who got in and out. So I see comparisons, but I think this is a totally different scenario.
Well, then talk about from a soldier's perspective, from a military member's perspective. I'm so fascinated by the intelligence that was gathered here, the operation to carry this out. I mean, it really was an impressive military show of force.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the military, there's something called joint operations. Joint operations is when you have different branches of the military. So Army, Air Force, or Army, Navy, or Air Force, Navy, some combination of that. Joint operations is extremely complex because they don't train together day to day. So the Army obviously trains and they do their stuff, and the Air Force is off doing their stuff. But when they come together to do joint operations, there's a level of complexity that people don't see normally. So for our Air Force to prep an invasion, they have to reduce the ability for Venezuela to shoot down our aircraft. For U.S. Army to get on the ground, they have to penetrate their anti-aircraft systems. They have to be able to land safely, all while the Navy's operating off the coast to launch that fleet. So the level of complexity, like we've talked about, is enormous. And the fact that they did this without losing a single soldier, airman, or seaman is incredible. It shows the level of planning they had.
We're speaking with Mike Bouchard, son of Sheriff Bouchard, a candidate for Michigan's 10th Congressional District. And Mike, for listeners who may feel foreign conflicts are like far removed from the daily life here in Michigan and what they're dealing with day to day, why should they care about what happens in Venezuela?
Well, I think right off the bat, the fact that the government of Venezuela is not going to continue to flood our country with drugs. And one of the other things they did that people haven't been talking about is they emptied our prisons and intentionally sent Trinidad-Aragua members to the United States. That's not a conspiracy. That's a fact. I remember we were doing intelligence down on the southern border, and we were tracking people the government of Venezuela were sending into our country to destabilize us. So it keeps us safer at home. I know people are worried about endless wars. I am very against endless wars. This scenario is intended to keep our country safe here now. So it's going to affect our day-to-day life.
All right, well, back to your race. You're trying to win the seat that is vacated by John James. How are you going to do it?
Well, right off the bat, the seat needs somebody who has the leadership and the experience. I bring that from day one. But then, too, campaigns are all about a team. I've put together a great team that cares about this district, that knows this district. And we're going to get out. We're going to talk to voters. We're going to tell them why I'm the right candidate for the job, and also to hear about what they have to say. What are their worries? I want to be the people's representative. And at the end of the day, if the representative is not out listening to the people, they're not right for the seat. So I'm going to tell and show people that I'm a man of action and that I want to earn their support and fight for them in D.C.
Mike Bouchard, candidate in Michigan's 10th Congressional District. Appreciate you coming on this morning. Thank you so much. Good luck in the race.
Thanks so much, guys.
I think, you know, one of the things he said that sticks out to me is nobody wants the endless wars.
No.
You know, and I don't think that, I mean, it doesn't seem like that would be the case in Venezuela.
I think it's too early to say that. That's my opinion.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't feel like it warrants that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Right? It is early. But that is a real worry for people. I don't see boots on the ground. I do not see that.
I don't see that
happening here. But that is something that people are worried about.
Yeah, and I do, when it comes to races like this congressional race, mm-hmm. there is just a lot of value, I think, in someone who has served this
yes.
country.
Yes.
Would have given up their life for this country, mm-hmm. trying to then go to Congress and make something happen. I like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's lots of value there.
And the 10th District is really, you know, economically, politically, culturally diverse. You got a lot of people from different backgrounds in that district, and I think he could really appeal to those in that district.
And people who don't know the 10th District off the top of their head, mm-hmm. Southern Macomb, Rochester, Rochester Hills, and a little Oakland County.
Yep. All right. It is coming up on 7:30, and we'll get the news from Fox, and we'll come back with more of JR Morning here on a Wednesday hump day, 760 WJR.
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. I love what Melania has been telling Donald Trump about one of his favorite moves.
Okay, everything's heavy all the time. Let's be a little lighter. President Trump talked about that dance move.
His dance?
Yeah.
The two hands? Okay.
The two-hand thing uh-huh. that the football players do.
What are we
everything.
Calling that? Like, we have the Dougie and we have, like...
They call it the Trump dance, I think.
That's it?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's
There's
what I heard.
There's got to be something more creative there.
Nobody's really come
Just
up
call
with
it the Trumpy. You guys name
like
it.
Like the... I don't know. The mixer or something.
Work,
it's got.
Let's
we got to
workshop
gotta,
this.
It's got to be something.
Yeah, we'll get to the bottom of what we should call it. But according to President Trump, his wife does not like it.
My wife, by the way, my wife hates when I do this. She said, you know, she's a very classy person, right? She said, it's so unpresidential. I said, but I did become president. She hates when I dance. I said, everybody wants me to dance. Darling, it's not presidential. She actually said, could you imagine FDR dancing? She said that to me. And I have to say this, the dancing they really like. She said they don't like it. They're just being nice to you. I said, that's not right. The place goes crazy.
So she's out on the dancing.
Hey, it's good fodder. I mean, comedians do it, you know?
Just sort of point this out, but it would be tough for FDR to dance, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Yes, it would.
But I get the point she's making.
Yes, it would. I mean, it kind of became a flashpoint. I mean, you had guys at NFL games doing it.
Yeah.
Didn't Amon-Ra do it at one point?
When the president was in attendance, I believe.
At the Commanders mm-hmm. game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it became like a cultural thing.
And comedians love it.
I think he would probably tell you that he's not, he's not going to be on Dancing with the Stars anytime soon.
He absolutely would not say that. He would say he's the best dancer known to man.
I don't think that. I think he's got to move.
If he's asked.
Everybody's got to move. When you go to a wedding, you got to move.
If he's asked to be on Dancing with the Stars, you don't think he wouldn't go?
No.
I do.
It's on ABC. He wouldn't go.
Oh, because it's on ABC.
If Fox News was having a dance-off, he would do
it. He would definitely be there.
Do you see, you're probably a good dancer.
I'm okay.
So you got moves. You go to a wedding, you got moves.
Oh, yeah. Me and my sister.
You got moves.
Well, hello. We were at the Starlight Lounge up north together.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Jamie can get down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a move. I've got like a foot stomp.
A foot stomp.
That's what I've got. I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. But Donald Trump's got the little fist pump deal.
The MAGA shuffle.
The MAGA shuffle. Very good.
Sure.
I don't know. I love that Melania doesn't. She's not on board. Not on board. I do have a little bit of a question for you. Do you think, I was listening to a podcast, and he's a comedian. Don't really take at face value.
Okay.
Anything that he says politically. But I am a little curious, because he said something that sparked this. Is the Donald Trump luster losing its luster? Is that thing that vaulted him to a serious election win, is that fading?
Is the shininess going away?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was something that I was thinking about a little bit, because I was, you know, there's always going to be a dip, right? You get elected. There's that support that you garner from voters. You spend years working to fire people up. Mm-hmm. And then it all culminates in an election. You win. And then, you know, we've seen it time and time again that come midterms, you lose support.
Yeah.
Right? You lose the majorities that you may have. And so it shifts. It ebbs and flows. And after a year of, you know, pretty radical decisions, mm-hmm. things that are pretty different, tariffs, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Taking these actions against Venezuela most recently. Like, is that little shine, as you called it, is it fading?
Well, I think, you know, when he was running the certain things he ran on that he said he was going to do, and when he got in office, he did some of those things. Some things he's doing that he didn't run on, he didn't say he was going to do, and maybe people are not, you know, feeling those. And I think that could kind of start taking the shine off of him, because he's doing some things that they didn't necessarily think he would do or didn't talk about during the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, you do things that you don't talk about, for sure.
Well, there are polls pulling out after the Venezuela attack.
Mm-hmm.
And only 4 in 10 Americans approve of the attack in the Washington Post poll, and 1/3 approve in the Reuters Ipsos poll.
Hmm.
So I think possibly with these big actions, if people don't like it, sure, the shine's wearing off.
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. And then, I mean, you could also point to the fact that, you know, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, for example. Like, yes, she's one person.
Yeah.
But you kind of could throw Lauren Boebert in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of could throw Nancy Mace in the mix, and all of the Epstein file stuff, where they've pulled away a little bit. And in Marjorie Taylor Greene's case, completely.
Yeah.
So there does seem to be a little bit of, in my mind, validity to that thought process, that things are changing a little bit. And Donald Trump goes out and says, well, look, if Democrats win the midterms, if they retake control of the House,
yeah,
I'm getting impeached.
He said it.
Right, and that may just be a rallying cry. It may be a signal to Republican voters to go, we're going to go down this path again? You want to do this?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he really cares at this point.
No.
But I think that it might be a bit of a wake-up call to Republicans, not only in Washington, but around the country, that are going to be casting these ballots to go, like, is that where you want to go again?
Speaking of the Epstein files, there was that December 19th deadline to release them all. And so for 1% of it, 12,285 documents, that's less than 1% of all the 2 million files have been released. And the DOJ is saying in a Monday court filing that substantial work needs to be done, and that they're, you know, looking at these files, and they'll update the court of the progress.
And I'm wondering, how long is it going to take for the court to say something, or to say, listen, you know, I said the 19th.
Which court?
The court that gave the order to release.
Well, Congress gave.
Well, Congress gave. Yeah, they passed the Epstein Files Act or something.
Yeah,
Transparency
Act. Well, then, you know.
I mean, you had.
You already know how that's going to.
Yeah, I mean, you had Democrats saying that they were going to try to hold Pam Bondi in contempt.
Yeah.
For this, which is not going to happen.
I mean,
they They don't have the ability to do that right now. They don't have the numbers.
There's an inability to focus on anything because so much is going on all the time. Like, they were focused on the Epstein files, and then Venezuela happened.
Yeah.
They were focused on the ACA subsidies, and, there's going to be a government shutdown if they don't come up with something soon, too.
That's
but there's just so much going on all the time.
It's pretty unrelenting. I don't know. To me, a lot of this, I look at it and just go, like, okay. I have to throw my hands up sometimes because it is nonsensical. Like, you're very obviously not doing things that are supposed to, you're not doing your job. You're supposed to be helping us.
Mm-hmm.
We put you there to do the job.
Who are you talking to right now?
To make sure, the whole lot, everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Because everybody you got to yell on this side, then yell on this side. Everybody's got to be angry about something.
Right.
When in reality, you know, you take the John Fetterman approach for example. You know, he's like, all right, well, if we need to pass these subsidies, let's go a year and then figure it out in the meantime.
Right.
Or his stance on Venezuela going, Nicolas Maduro's a really bad guy, and our military carried out an amazing operation. He's out. The people of Venezuela are happy. Why can't we also acknowledge that? Like, there are some people that are taking common sense approach. Unfortunately, for a vast, vast majority of them, they just, it's the game that they're playing.
Well, yeah, but that's where we are now. Everybody has a side, everybody has a silo, and that's what we do.
But it's ridiculous.
I get it.
Yeah, ridiculous. Agree. Cosign.
7:44, time for this week's S&P Global Mobility Minute with Kent Chu.
There were just over 3 million units of new vehicle inventory listed for sale in the United States as of November 2025, according to the latest S&P Global Mobility retail advertised inventory data. This marks a small decline of 2.8% compared to last year. Vehicle affordability is top of mind with buyers. S&P Global Mobility data shows discounts increased $163 to $3,389 per vehicle, with 54% of vehicles listed for sale under MSRP. In the biggest and arguably the most competitive compact utility segment, which includes top-selling vehicles like the Honda CR-V and Toyota RAV4, 64% of the inventory is listed for sale under MSRP. As expected, EV inventory continued to rise. It was up 6% from the prior month, but still considerably less than last year, down 32% compared to November 2024. The Chevrolet Equinox EV surpassed the Ford Mustang Mach-E in having the most available inventory, accounting for nearly 12% of all EVs listed for sale. Current demand is clearly on hybrids. Hybrids are selling nearly 2 weeks faster than the industry average. Brands have responded to the consumer with hybrid inventory up 26% year over year. I'm Kent Chu with this week's Automotive Minute from S&P Global Mobility.
What is happening in Lansing for this new year? That's the topic of today's Capital Report, sponsored by the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. And we have Mike Harris, a Republican from Michigan's 52nd District, on deck with us right now. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I know I'm looking ahead in my lead in there, but we have to look back. I mean, not many bills were passed in 2025. Do you think more so this year?
Well, I think that's the plan. It's, you know, I think we're really focusing on quality versus quantity. I've said since I got into office in 22, you know, sometimes I think the legislature sometimes tries to justify its existence by the number of bills that we introduce or pass. And I don't think that's always helpful for Michigan. So I think they need to be thoughtful. And I think we need to pass good policy versus just sheer numbers.
Mike, what are some priorities that you're planning to push in this year and that, you know, that really matter to your constituents?
Yeah, I'm really excited about 2026. You know, I think we've teed up a few things in 2025 and kind of the resonating. So I'm the chair of the insurance committee. One of the things that we've really focused on all last year was affordability in Michigan and trying to make sure that people understand that when we push mandates out there, all that does is increase premiums and whatnot for the average consumer and employers. And so we've really tried to wrap our heads around what are the cost drivers on healthcare and auto insurance and things like that. How can we address that and make Michigan more affordable? So we're going to find some things that are going to help rein that in, things like third-party litigation funding. which we teed up last year, but we're going to be looking for some hearings this year. We're working on insurance fraud, gift card fraud. Drone defense has made the news recently. So we're looking at ways. I personally believe, you know, I think we've talked in the past, my past life was law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that one of the next big attacks that we're going to see on our country, terrorism-wise, is going to be based on unmanned aircraft, so drones and whatnot. We want to put things in place here in Michigan that allow us to defend our citizens and allow law enforcement to have some teeth to do their jobs. And it blew my mind that we didn't have like drone defense on places like the Capitol or other critical infrastructure in our state. So we're going to make sure that that gets across the finish line.
On the other side of the building there, you've got the Senate and Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt, who's also running for governor, is asking the Office of the Auditor General to look at the child development and care program grants in the United States, or excuse me, in Michigan. They're getting roughly $540 million. These are lower funded, lower income folks that take advantage of these programs. This is kind of mirroring what's happening in Minnesota. Is that something that you think is going to catch fire here?
Well, I think it should. I think we should always be good stewards of people's money. And, you know, you see last year we uncovered a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. And I think that's something that we need to be mindful of here and make sure that spending is really tiered towards legitimate government purposes and going to the programs that we think that we're paying for.
Is there a danger, though? I mean, what happened in Minnesota is Minnesota. That's not what's happening here. I worry about, like, kids being affected who really deserve some of these things.
Sure. Well, I don't think there's a problem with doing an audit, right?
Right.
And it's, when we dig in and we make sure that the money that has been intended to go towards children and proper spending, you know, is it always going to there? You know, or do we have a situation where, you know, it's like Minnesota, it'd be nice to give the public some reassurance that that is not happening here. So I don't think there's any problem with audits and oversight on taxpayer dollars going to different things.
You know, healthcare affordability remains a concern for a lot of people as well. What's on deck in Lansing to tackle that issue this year?
Yeah, that's big. It's, you know, and I don't know that this is necessarily a one-session solution. It's, you know, there's a lot of things we're looking at. The list that I gave you already, things like third-party litigation funding, you know, reining in fraud, reining in litigation abuse, things like that are things that we all pay for. Looking at things like maybe hospital facility fees, you know, costs that keep impacting our citizens are things that we really have to look for, and we have to look to make sure that there's legitimate spending and legitimate care for people, and we're not entering into this huge profit margin on the backs of our citizens.
Could data centers be the buzzwords of Michigan in 2026? It seems like that's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, I think the companies that run the data centers would like to think that that's going to be a focus in 2026. And, you know, I can't tell you that it will or won't be, but I think there's some very thoughtful policy things that need to be hammered out. And, you know, our citizens around the state have kind of made some stands in communities. And I really think that, you know, we need to weigh all the options. Unfortunately, I think you guys see this all the time. I don't think the use of Facebook and YouTube and a lot of these other social media sites are going away anytime soon. So, you know, there's definitely a need, but we have to weigh the cost of that, right? Mm. So I do think there's going to be a conversation this year on data centers. I just don't know how far it goes.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to you, Mike Harris. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Capitol Report, sponsored by the Michigan Chamber of Commerce.
Have a good morning.
You too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot out there.
Yes.
Like, the job seems huge of things you need to take care of. It's up to leadership to sort of tackle one thing at a time and set an agenda.
Well, and then, I mean, you're still dealing with a lot of the basic necessities. I mean, kids are still not reading at grade level, uh-huh. still not doing math at grade level. That's problematic. You're uh-huh. still trying to grow the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have an aging population that we're trying to get turned around. You're still trying to retain the talent here to make sure that you've got that next generation of workforce here in Michigan and not going elsewhere. Like, all of these things are not going away.
No.
And like you said, it's not a one session problem.
Right. And all these people running for governor who have visions for the future of the state, it's important that, you know, a good person gets an office there's a lot going on. And this state has a lot of open positions that people are running for this year. Lots going on. All right. And lots more to come on JR Morning in our 8 o'clock hour. We're going to be talking to Alyssa Slotkin about the Venezuela attack, her thoughts there. Guy Gordon in Vegas with the latest in tech and how that affects our lives. And of course, Name That Tune, my favorite part of the week. That's at 8:49. Join us.
8 o'clock hour. It's good to have you. I hope you're taking your vitamin D supplements.
Okay.
Because I don't think we're getting much of it today.
You're not getting it naturally.
Yeah. it ain't coming from the sky.
It ain't coming from the sun. No.
I'll tell you that. Pretty gloomy out for a second day in a row.
It is.
It's early January here in the beautiful state of Michigan.
Come on, that's what we get, right?
Sometimes
what we
get. I want to do hashtag why do we live here? When it's like freezing or windy or looking like that. But then you get to summer at like Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you live here.
On the lake,
mm-hmm.
on a boat, mm-hmm. on the golf course.
Boat, yes.
I mean, my goodness. It's a heck of a place to be. Meanwhile, Donald Trump said that the United States will be getting anywhere between 30 and 50 million barrels of sanctioned oil from Venezuela. It'll be turned over. Donald Trump said that it's being held in storage in Washington's embargo on Venezuela exports. It'll be sold at market prices, and this is all being done after what happened in the military operation. So we're getting some of this.
I thought it was a law enforcement operation.
It was a military operation under the auspices of law enforcement. Law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be getting this oil like immediately?
Not immediately.
Yeah. I mean, there's not infrastructure issues and those kind of things as well. I mean, you know.
Lots of it. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the oil infrastructure in Venezuela has degraded
mm-hmm.
under Nicolas Maduro.
Yes.
They were pretty, I think I read a stat. It was, they were producing about a fourth of what they used to 20 years ago, 30
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not as robust as it once was. And so the United States goes, they capture Nicolas Maduro and his wife, and now the power struggle over, you know, what comes next, how involved is the United States in the governing of Venezuela, but then on the energy side of things.
Well, yeah, and the pressure on Delcy Rodriguez is high.
Mm-hmm.
The president's saying he wants mm-hmm. total access of Venezuela's oil industry. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And the oil companies are going, this isn't, it's not a switch you can flip.
No.
This is something that you got. There would be major investments that need to go.
And they want to make sure it's safe when they go over there as well. I mean, the oil companies, they don't want to rent. They want to buy a house, so to speak. You know, they want to. They don't want to just rent.
They want to set up shop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know that oil tanker they were chasing after that went into the open waters?
Mm-hmm.
Now Russia is saying that it is registered as a Russian vessel. So if the Americans go after that tanker, it's going after Russia.
Yeah, it's they painted a Russian flag on the side of it, which mm-hmm. wasn't there initially.
No, America was saying it was countryless.
Correct.
Right.
Right. Well, now Russia's saying, well, no, it's ours.
So mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. happened.
As Ron Burgundy said, this is escalating quickly.
Rook to A9. This is the game of chess that's being played.
Yeah. The window is now open for Amazon customers to claim refunds tied to a massive $2.5 billion settlement with the FTC. Amazon already sent automatic refunds to some eligible Prime members in late 2025, but if you didn't receive one, you may still qualify and can now file a claim, according to the FTC. Notices are being sent to eligible U.S. Prime members who were enrolled and tried to cancel between June of 2019 and June of 2025 and use few Prime benefits. Under the settlement, refunds can total up to $51 per customer. Payments are expected to be issued late this year and can be sent by check, PayPal, or Venmo. The lawsuit accused Amazon of misleading customers into signing up for Prime and making it difficult to cancel Amazon agreed to pay $1 billion in penalties and return $1.5 billion to customers.
I'm not a part of this because I've never canceled. Will never cancel. <That's right. laughs>
Does not apply to you?
No.
Okay.
I will say, the stuff on Amazon is wild. Wild. Like, Henry's birthday is coming up, right? Uh-huh. His birthday's in 2 weeks. And we're looking at, you know, party favors and stuff. You know, the things that are on there.
Everything.
It's everything.
Oh, it like, is.
His party favors that he wants are little stuffed dogs that you put them in a little house, and that's your carrying case.
Okay.
And they come with a little fenced-in yard and a little chalkboard, and you write, like, pick one, whatever one you want, and then you put the dogs in the yard, and then the kids come in. It's like, what? I didn't even know that existed. What? What happened to just putting candy in a bag and going, here you go? It's the Wild West.
Well, what gets me about Amazon, too, I mean, you can look at a TV commercial and see a product, and you can only get it on television, on TV. It's only on TV for $19.95. Go on Amazon, they have it.
For $3.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But so, there have been these things online about, like, what you order and what you get.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's not exactly what you've seen, and it comes, and you're like, what is this? It's like a center for ants. You get that movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk Lions a little bit, because Dan Campbell, coming up on his sixth season as head coach, will be looking for his fourth offensive coordinator. There's been a bit of a revolving door. Obviously, Ben Johnson was great, and we miss him a lot. And now they have to find a new one because they fired John Morton as OC yesterday. Dave Burkett has some options for you in the free press. My pal Dave Burkett. Scotty Montgomery, Lions receivers coach, assistant head coach. That would be hiring within. Hank Fraley, the OL coach. Brian Daboll, ex-New York Giants coach. Declan Doyle, Chicago Bears offensive coordinator. David Blau, remember him?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Washington Commanders quarterbacks coach. David Webb, Denver Broncos pass game coordinator. And those are just some names that he put out there that the Lions could be targeting.
Yeah. My stance on this is you got to get it right.
Yeah. And you that is the hot outside. Take of the day.
Hot take of the morning.
From Chris
the most shocking things I've ever heard said in the history of saying things.
Get it right. Don't mess around.
Great advice.
Brad, if you need some advice, you come to me. Get it right.
Okay. Staying in the Lions
We're on a first name basis, Brad Holmes.
Oh, okay. That's good.
That's why I said Brad.
That's good.
The Lions are not playing in the playoffs. We all know that. They're not getting ready for anything this weekend, which is a huge bummer. But Amon-Ra St. Brown is still out there in the community. I love this. He surprised Detroit's Durfee Elementary Middle School students and launched his Rhymes with Reason literacy program.
I just want to say I'm so proud of you guys for starting Rhymes with Reason and finishing it. I know some of you guys are still going. To be able to start something and finish it is big, no matter what it is in life. So I just want to say thank you to you guys. I'm so proud of you guys. You guys have done an amazing job. Keep going, it's not done yet. I know, you know, the second part of the school is starting now, so make sure you guys continue to stay in your books, continue to read this amazing book, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. We'll get into that later. But again, I just want to say how proud I am of you guys.
Very cool.
So Amon-Ra's out there, right, and in the community doing things. He said to Eric Woodyard of ESPN, anytime I'm around kids, they have a different type of energy, like unconditional love. They're not worried about the season. And he got a huge reaction when he was walking out to make that speech. And I just appreciate athletes who use their influence and famous personalities to do things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you ingratiate Absolutely. Yourself to the community like that.
Yes.
I mean, you become such a valuable member of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very, very cool when guys do this.
And a lot of people are like, okay, I'm out of the playoffs. I'm out. I'm going to go back to where my Cancun, home base
right.
is. Yeah. But he's still out there doing some literacy program. I love that.
Panay Sewell was at the Pistons game the other night. Jahmyr Gibbs was at the Pistons
Gibbs,
game.
That's right.
So they're kind of hanging around.
I know. I'm very excited about Saturday. I believe it's Saturday when the Pittsburgh Steelers host the Houston Texans.
You don't need to throw it in our faces. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right, from Detroit to Las Vegas, we're heading out west. We'll talk to Guy Gordon, who's at CES next on JR Morning. All right, Guy Gordon is doing the Lord's work out at CES.
Yes.
Taking he likes in, it. This yes. is his forte.
He is really taking one for the team here.
I know. Hey, it's a tough job. Somebody's got to do
it's
it.
It's exactly right. It's where we go to Las Vegas where we find Guy Gordon. Guy, good morning.
The buffets have nothing to do with it.
Nothing. Nothing to do with it. I'm actually curious. I know you got a lot of stuff here. Have you seen these new Lego blocks?
Oh, listen, don't think I didn't think of Jake Henry, my Henry,
yeah.
and James, and my granddaughters. Yeah, there's a smart brick now that can kind of bring whatever you build from Lego to life. Now, it's only going to be for their new projects that are be coming out over the next year, but there'll be like a tag on the product. Like if you're building a helicopter and you put the smart brick on, it will make helicopter sounds.
It's so cool. Lego's big in my house right now.
Oh, man. Lego's just big for a long time.
And you don't see a lot of toys at CES, so it's pretty cool that they're entering the sphere.
Yeah. And you know, the first product it's going to come out on is a Star Wars X-Wing fighter.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course it's Star Wars.
Right. I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what do we got? I mean, there are a ton of things out there that make life a little easier for folks, but do they really?
Well, okay, so you guys are going to be playing Name That Tune a little bit later on. I'm going to start the Wednesday games a little early here by playing a game of Make It or Break It, and we've done this in past years. I'm going to explain a product to you, and I gave you a list there, so you can tell me, we'll start wherever you want to, and you tell me if it's something that you would actually entertain buying in the marketplace.
Well, let's just start with number one.
Okay, here's the question, and this is really more of a societal question. How early will you go out to use your lawn blower?
Some people use it to blow the snow, Guy.
Yeah. Well, blow the snow or blow that. The leaves uh-huh. or do yard-powered yard work, because we've got all these power appliances now that we use. What's the earliest you'll go out and think that you won't get the stink eye from the neighbor or your spouse?
8:30, 9 o'clock.
Okay.
I agree with that.
All right. Well, the big problem is that they're just too doggone noisy. So last night I saw a new leaf blower from a company called Whisper Arrow. It's called the Tone. A couple guys from Stanford got together and redid how the fans work on this thing. First of all, when I pushed the button, it was so powerful my arm shot backwards.
There was recoil.
Like a shotgun.
Really bad recoil, But it's 60% quieter than the Ego blower that I have at home. There are different power settings that are really easy to do. The only complaint I had, it was 11 pounds. It was on the heavy side in the marketplace. And it runs about $100 more expensive, but they are so confident that you can use this anytime without annoying the neighbors that they actually put a headlamp on it, a little mini headlamp. So you can blow early in the morning for the snow, Jamie, or you can blow late at night when you get home from work and the sun's already gone down.
Make it.
I'm in with that.
I have a neighbor, man. Good Lord.
You're going to
well,
give
that's what people were saying. They were saying, okay, how can I just very subtly send, some of your product information to my neighbor next door?
Oh, my goodness.
No etiquette.
None.
So we're in on number one.
Okay.
All right. How about the hybrid headphones?
So I thought of Lloyd when I saw these. This is called the Neo. They are headphones that are great 400 millimeter headphones. They are beat worthy. Okay. They were really, really good sounding, but it's two products in one. When you take them off your head, you twist them and they lock together to become a Bluetooth speaker that you can put. And this thing jams.
Oh no, shoot. You got me with that.
This is the one that I thought that it runs $250. But again, it's two products in one. They're 240 millimeter drivers, 200 hours of play for battery life on the headphones, 10 hours as a speaker. You can get plug and play batteries to extend that. But it transforms your over-ear headphones. And by the way, the headphones were comfortable. $250, so they're a little pricey.
Yeah.
Make it or break it.
I make it. I like it. I'm good. I'm in.
Two for one kind of gets me. I like that it can do two things.
Yeah. I'm out only because two for one, if it breaks, then you're out two products. I have enough speakers. I'm good. I'm covered. So I'm a no on that one.
I could never
I'm going to see if I can get some virtual optimism for you for the rest of the year.
AI's working on everything else. Yeah, right. You know, for him, right?
Yeah. So now here's one, and I didn't get a chance to demo it, and I think it's a leap of faith. It is the Glide Home Haircut System. It's app-controlled length, so it will adjust from an app that you have on your phone. You basically hand your clippers to your helper who's going to cut your hair, and the clippers are automatically adjusted by the app, and they just run it up your head. And so they say it's got a mistake-proof design, no experience necessary, unlimited options, they claim. It will do the fades in the right places. And obviously, it saves you some serious money down the road. They don't have a price on it yet, but it's called the Glide, G-L-Y-D-E. Would you take the leap of faith and let an app cut your hair?
That's a no.
No.
That's a no for me.
God love my mother. I let her cut my hair once when I was in grade school.
Uh-huh.
Never again. It's a no for me, dog. That's a no for me.
All right, here's one for you, Chris, or Jamie. As a golfer, we've used sometimes the TrackMan system to do swing diagnosis and tell us what we're doing wrong. And it, you know, basically it's data. They give you the raw data and it tells you your swing path, your face and impact, things like that.
For me, it just says everything. Everything's wrong. Everything well, that you're doing is wrong.
Well, this that is
was I was talking to Kevin about this, and I said, yeah, my worry is it will say, have you thought about horseshoes?
Yeah, all right.
But this is a system from SG Lab. It was designed by a golf pro. It's called the G-Grip Pro. So the sensor is not in some like little mini boom box that you set down on the driving range. You don't have to cart a bunch of junk out with you. The sensor is in the golf club. You will take swings, and it will give you feedback on your swing path, your face. It will show you the estimated trajectory of the ball. But the other thing that that TrackMan doesn't do, it will tell you about your grip strength and whether you're too tight on the club or too loose, which would really affect your swing a lot more than they would tell you. But so it then turns that data, that motion data, and it will tell you through a headset, through earbuds, what you need to do to fix it.
In.
So your golf club will talk back to you.
I think yes, because a lot of times you can't self-diagnose. Like, what is happening with me today?
Right.
And every day is different when you step out on the range.
Right.
I liked it because it's not, you can put it in your bag and, you know, obviously you couldn't use it on the course, but I did the demo. We got to figure it out a little bit. It's a little noisy in there, but we hope to put it up on WGR.com. I will just tell you that for $500, and I hate golf gadgets. I don't use them. This is a golf gadget that I could use.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that makes sense.
We're in on that.
Yep.
The concept of my golf clubs talking back to me is anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
And you're I see it as helpful. You got to get some virtual optimism, guy.
Yeah. Like, no, I think mine will say,
this 7-iron's getting a little lippy.
The 19th hole.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, has there been anything there that you don't like?
Okay, some things that I really hate. I saw a product last night called Joy Calls. It's an AI companion that will call your loved one, do a welfare check, but also carry on a conversation, kind of be a virtual friend. Now, they're trying to keep the family in the loop, so it will send you a virtual transcript of the conversation. But I know what would happen if I gave this to my mom. She would start humming Cats in the Cradle back at me, okay? Because you're basically outsourcing the care of your loved one to a bot.
Yeah, I don't like
that. I can't tell you how much I hate that. The other thing that I saw...
Real quick, guy.
All right, Divot Fix. It is a robot divot repair system that will go out on the golf course and repair divots. And I tell you, the unintentional consequence is fewer people will repair their own divots.
And that is Guy Gordon. We leave it on that. Thank you. We'll take a break. More next.
We've been talking about this all week, the capture of Venezuela's leader, and talking to different stakeholders of what they think about it. Senator Alyssa Slotkin has been very clear, tweeting out, President Trump wants to look tough by attacking countries abroad to distract from his failure to attack the core issue of the cost of living at home. We now have Senator Alyssa Slotkin on the phone to elaborate further. Good morning to you, Senator.
Morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. There are a lot of issues going on. Let's start with this one. As this has unfolded and moved forward, do you still have the same thought?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, look, we're all talking about it today, right? I went back and looked, and in this past year, in the 1 year that President Trump has been back in office, he has taken military action in 9 parts of the world, 7 countries, 2 different oceans. You know, for a guy who literally ran on getting out of forever wars and not getting involved in military entanglements, he's done the opposite more than any other president in recent memory. So, you know, that means your attention as media and my attention and everything has been focused abroad instead of on things like housing. I mean, we have like a housing emergency in the country. So I do think that he's got a taste for kind of looking tough. And that's what Venezuela is about right now.
And, you know, the administration framed this partly around drug trafficking. And based on what you know, you don't really believe it was all about stopping the drug cartels, do you?
Well, now they've said as much. I mean, in the beginning, right, they were saying, look, we've got a drug problem. And everyone in America knows that there's drugs, major drugs coming into this country, and fentanyl in particular. But Venezuela doesn't produce fentanyl. They move cocaine, right, particularly to Europe. So fine, cocaine's still an illegal drug. Cocaine's not good. They make a lot of money off cocaine. So we started attacking ships coming out of Venezuela in the Caribbean and in the Pacific. And, you know, the president and his team were saying very openly, this is about drugs. It's not about regime change. It's not about anything else. But the president himself has said, you know, it's about the oil. They have a huge oil resources. We want a piece of that. He's hosting oil executives this week in the White House. I mean, you don't have to guess what the president is thinking anymore because he said it on Air Force One and publicly. And, you know, as someone who served in places like Iraq with the CIA, where, you know, everyone said the conspiracy theory was that it was all about the oil, the president this time is just saying it out loud when it comes to Venezuela.
We're getting some reports now from Russian state media. That's the source that the New York Times is citing here. Excuse me. That the United States is attempting to intercept this Russian-flagged oil tanker, that the Russians have sent in reinforcements to try to get this shipping container where it needs to go in Venezuela. That would be a real escalation then with Russia here. Have you heard anything on this?
Yeah, so just before I came on, I was asking my team, because the United States has been watching this ship, this Russian flag ship, for a couple of weeks. It actually reflagged itself as Russian a week ago. And there are reports now that they're trying to link up with Russian submarines for an escort. You know, and anyone who's of a certain age, right, I'm 49, remembers kind of Cold War drama in Hollywood movies. You know, Russians escorting a ship and the United States trying to board it and seize it is right out of the 1980s. And I think that, you know, that's definitely a different page in this conflict. So we're watching it closely. You know, Russia had condemned the capturing of Maduro and bringing him back and said it was illegal. I kind of snorted when I saw that because Russia invaded Ukraine. So they're in no place to be, you know, looking down on anybody. But it's definitely getting interesting, that's for sure.
What are your thoughts on our allies, the Europeans, coming together to talk about this Greenland situation? It just feels so odd that they're condemning something the United States is doing.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I think the average person just doesn't understand, you know, Greenland is a lot of ice, you know, it's very cold up there, and the United States had access to a military base there for basically that since the Cold War, for the past 60, 70 years. If you want to have access to that area, just negotiate a deal and expand that base so that U.S. forces can, you know, do what they did for decades in that area of the world, talking about buying it and antagonizing it. You know, the president has said it's a way to force, you know, Denmark into negotiations. It just feels like this adventurism. And again, we're talking about Greenland this morning. We're not talking about healthcare, which for many Michiganders has doubled in cost as of January 1. So for me, it's like a distraction, a look over here, because he can't fulfill any of what he said he was going to do on the domestic side.
When the president talks about running Venezuela, Senator, especially its oil reserves, any red flags, you know, come to you, you know, raised as, you know, a former CIA officer and now you're U.S. Senator, any red flags come up with you when he starts talking about that?
Well, of course. And I don't think you have to be a CIA officer. Anyone who had a friend or a loved one or just watched our forever wars in Iraq and Afghanistan knows that, you know, it's one thing to invade. No one ever questions, I think, that the United States of America is the strongest military in the world. And we're, you know, the Venezuelans, we were never going to have a military, you know, problem with their military. But once you go in and you say you're going to run things, you own it. And we don't know what's going to happen. You know, I remember them celebrating in Baghdad mm-hmm. when we invaded. And then how many years later, we still have U.S. forces there, yeah. right? And how many died? Thousands. Afghanistan, the early days of an invasion or a military action are one thing, but where it goes after that are very much another. And we're in early, early days. And I don't think the average American who saw two forever wars is looking for another one.
Well, something that's happening here in the United States, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth formally issuing this censure to your colleague Mark Kelly for the video that that you were a part of, he was a part of, reminding soldiers that they can defy illegal orders. What has been your reaction to that? Has there been any indication that there could be blowback on you? I know you were in a different segment. You were in CIA, but what's your reaction to that? What have you been hearing?
Yeah, well, the FBI reached out to the rest of us on the very same issue. They're doing a civilian inquiry, and that continues. So, you know, you get lawyers and you have to prepare a legal strategy and all for citing the Uniform Code of Military Justice, for just citing a document that the military has to follow. And I think ironically that Pete Hegseth has talked about openly on TV himself in 2016, 2017. So unfortunately, it's really, you know, for Mark Kelly and for myself, it's about going after someone for freedom of speech. And, you know, I just think we're not going to take that. You know, I think the goal is to say to other people, look, if you condemn and say something negative about the administration, you better watch yourself, because you're going to have legal action come after you. You're going to have security threats. It's an attempt to intimidate. And I'm just not going to roll over like that. And so I think for Senator Kelly, for myself, for the others, I think it's just very important that, look, you don't have to agree, and there's plenty of people who don't. I don't agree with half of what my fellow senators say on any given day, but does that mean that they should have legal action by federal law enforcement taken against them?
No. So then in hindsight, no reservations about putting that video out?
Well, we had done videos before. It was not on my bingo card that video was going to become the subject of 30-plus tweets by the President of the United States. I will say that video came out the same week that the Epstein files were approved for release. So again, in the spirit of like, look over here, we did not expect that the president was going to go high and right, as we say. And I've been talking about this issue since the very first day of the administration. I got into it, excuse me, with Secretary Hegseth in his confirmation hearing last winter on this very issue. There are constitutional rules that the military has to follow. And if you're asked to do something illegal, you have the right to push back. In fact, the responsibility. So I stand by it. But my whole life and the life of my family changed in the past 6 weeks with thousands of threats and 24/7 security. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Alyssa Slotkin, Senator Alyssa Slotkin, thank you for your time this morning. And we hope to talk to you in the future.
Great. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you, and Happy New Year. Coming up, Name That Tune, Stomp tickets on the line.